Zombie takeout carries your blood and soul back to the genesis of my life form.
Hello and welcome to episode 417 of Zombie Takeout, the B-movie and cult movie show. I'm John.
And I'm Scotto.
And without any further ado, on to this week's movie, which is from 1985, Life Force, our Mandela Effect movie. the one we were sure we reviewed until I think I got about halfway through and I'm like, no, I have not seen this in a very long time. of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by costuming. If you're making a movie, you're probably spending too much on it.
And also brought to you by strategically placed bars. Want to keep your rating down to an R? You're going to need a shit ton of strategically placed bars.
But only for some of your cast members.
Yes. Just the guy with the ones with the floppy bits. Mm. Not the... Alright, I guess I'm on here. The impromptu plot summary. Alright, so we have Halley's Comet, which is seen much more easily than you can in real life, but it no one had seen it in 70 years at the time they made this, so how would they have known how visible it would be?
Oh, yeah.
And green, too. I don't remember it being green at all.
Well, I mean, I would imagine it looks different in space than, you know, from Earth.
True.
You know,
good point.
Through the atmosphere. I don't know what it looks like from space. I don't think I've ever seen any footage.
I mean, I got to see it a little bit like in like some binoculars. I couldn't see with the naked eye when it was here
back
a year
nine,
after this like, film came out.
Okay, I remember. Was it then? Because I remember something back in the 90s there was a thing.
Well, okay, that was like a cult comet.
Maybe it was a different comet. Yeah, I saw a bit of it in the 90s. Anyway.
If I'm not mistaken, Halley's Comet was 86.
Okay.
And this was the year before.
Makes sense.
However, this is obviously some sort of future because, well, or alternate time universe because the UK has a space program. I mean, come on, guys.
Or at least there were a lot of Brits involved.
It's definitely the UK space program because it's, you know, the Churchill shuttle.
Oh, that's
and
true.
Stuff.
That's true.
I mean, there's a US space program that where Columbia is still, you know, around. Rest right. In peace. So the this UK space program is out exploring the comet before it hits Earth, and they find somehow there's a spaceship hidden in it. Not sure how that would work, like what a comet is, what a comet does, but somehow they put a spaceship inside of it. And when they decide, hey, let's go and check out this ship, and they first find a bunch of course, desiccated corpses. And
that look like that, giant bats.
And then they find three perfect human specimens just in glass casing and safety precautions. Who would need to take safety precautions? Mm-hmm. We're just going to bring them back to the ship.
There'd be no movie if they'd followed safety precautions.
Very true. But I mean, come on. When you walk through rooms of, you know, corpses, and then there's three people that are not corpses in there.
Guess who made the corpses?
Right, you have to find out who made the corpses first before bringing the people in good shape back with you.
Right.
I mean, I guess there could have still been a movie if they had, like, possessed one of the astronauts and you know, forced their way onto the ship. And then the ship could have landed in that way. But, of course, that doesn't leave us with the visuals that were provided for what, the first half hour of the movie, about
just about.
Yeah. So one of the specimens, I guess on their home planet they do not have clothes, and so
Well, that's not their true form.
True, right.
That was the form that they assumed when they scanned the minds of the astronauts. Or forms.
So she does a bit of a walkabout. Mm-hmm. I was trying to look up the episode of Coupling where they talked about this.
Oh, yeah, Jenny Agutter.
Well, right. They also talk about Matilda May in that episode, I believe, too.
I forgot.
I think there's the whole, like, comparing, like, movies and, you know, scenes.
I did a rewatch of Coupling for the first few seasons earlier in the year. It really doesn't hold up very well.
Really?
No.
I haven't seen it in a while. But anyway, so she's, of course, an easy target, except she has mind control powers and can pretty much remove the life force from someone from about, what, a few feet away, even?
The movie is based on Colin Wilson's 1976 novel, The Space Vampires.
Okay, that makes sense.
Just to give you an idea of their powers.
And so, so she, of course, is unstoppable, and it's hence the title of the show, this episode. She's out and about. She isn't looking for a mate, though. Turns out she's already found one. And, you know, of course, you know, the calls were coming from inside the house. It was the same guy in the beginning. But it's not like that was a spoiler, because it's pretty fucking obvious what happened.
Well, he's some kind of chosen one, and he's immune for some reason, and blah, blah, blah.
Right. There's a reason an astronaut survived that. He's the only one that survived in the mission, because he you know, it was an escape pod, and which I guess no one had thought of escape pods on the shuttle before 85, which is kind of something I wish they had thought of.
Yeah.
Considering what happened after this movie
and the shuttle. Right, would've
been good. So, but of course there was no room for that sort of thing. Anyway, so all hell breaks loose. You could almost say literally all hell breaks loose. Yeah. It turns into a zombie movie, pretty much.
Exactly. I have that in my notes. It suddenly becomes a zombie movie at the end. And with a lot of shades of Highlander and Ghostbusters.
Right. And I think this is actually same time as Highlander, isn't it?
Year after Ghostbusters.
Year after Ghostbusters. Maybe a year before Highlander. I can't remember now. Maybe a year before Highlander.
Okay.
But Highlander, of course, has, you know, everyone's carrying a sword and, you know.
There's more to Highlander. I was more referring to the, you know, blue lights streaking through the sky.
Yeah. I think Highlander did that better, though. But anyway, we have less flatulent looking.
Yeah.
We have the guy who you don't really think is going to be the hero is kind of running around the city trying to save the day. And of course it's the big cathedral where everything is happening, where it's literally Ghostbusters, you're right, where it's like the tall building is used as the antenna into the sky and Thule, and hilarity ensues.
There were two things I remembered going into this, because, like I said, I haven't seen it in ages.
I'll say. Oh.
Matilda May walking around nude. And Patrick Stewart. Neither were a thing in the movie for very long.
Yeah. This movie needed more Patrick Stewart.
But I loved the opening music, just very all of the music, but it was just very intense. And the opening narration was an interesting touch, because they just tell you right away, like, UK sent a ship up to investigate Halley's Comet, blah, blah, blah. Sets it up right from the beginning.
Well, speak of score, I mean, a Henry Mancini sci-fi score, you know, I didn't look up to see.
I think a lot of his music was replaced. I don't remember who did the music for it. I do remember reading that Mancini's music was replaced.
It's kind of, it does kind of just wind up being a John Williams light kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, apparently there's few different versions of this. I didn't realize that until after I'd watched it. So I had watched like an hour and a half version.
Oh, wow. The one I watched was just shy of 2 hours. It's also the one that's on Amazon. It's the actual full version of the movie.
Yeah, I think it was actually an hour and a half now I think about it. Or was it an hour 45? Okay. Now I have to reload.
Mine was an hour 56, just shy of 2 hours, which is the official running time on Wikipedia.
I watched it on HBO Max came in handy.
Oh, wow. I'm pondering trying it again for the new Lovecraft series.
It's got some weird things on there, like Turner Classic Movies and stuff. I watched Blood Simple on a zombie takeout unrelated movie. Although I guess Coens are in a real house.
Didn't we do Blood Simple? What was the one with like the old Prohibition era mobster movie we did?
We did Miller's Crossing.
That's it. I got them confused. Anyway, as you look that up, loved the organic look of the ship. Apparently, it was based on an artichoke.
Mine was 102 minutes.
Okay. Wow. What? You watched a much shorter version than I did.
Yes.
That explains why I was running late tonight. But also, I loved the spacewalk because it was so 80s. Back when we reviewed one of the Star Trek movies, it was The Thing. I talked about the blue glow of 80s sci-fi that was all over this thing.
and right, there was a lot of blue here.
And as they're going through the ship, because it is very organic looking, I kind of half expected some kind of giant crab thing to grab onto one of their faces.
Just a little, Geiger action going on with the...
I thought at first that the giant bats were a nice head fake, because I knew they weren't the vampires, or so I thought.
Yeah.
We find out at the end, the giant bats are the true form of the vampires.
Right.
Which is a little on the nose.
Yes, very much so. But, very Clash of the Titans looking.
Yeah. But I think for a lot of the movie, it does a great job of building suspense.
Yeah.
It's nice and intense. The movie kind of alternates between being really intense and dramatic and being really ridiculous and cheesy.
Right. It has really seriousness to it. At the same time, though, it has just silly absurdities to it. Anytime it tries to do action, it's kind of like, really? But anytime it's doing extreme drama, it kind of sucks you in, I guess I could say. No pun intended.
And I think it's a lot of their budget, maybe. Because the effects were mostly pretty cheesy. But also, that sort of mix of cheese and intense drama could be explained by this. It has been suggested that Life Force was largely a remake of Hammer Film Productions' Quatermass and the Pit. In an interview, director Tobe Hooper, best known for Chainsaw Massacre, discussed how Canon Films gave him $25 million, free reign, and Colin Wilson's book, The Space Vampires. Wilson then shares how giddy he was, quote, "I thought I'd go back to my roots and make a 70 millimeter Hammer film." So he basically made a Hammer film, which, again, Hammer films have that mix of cheese and drama.
But would it have been better if they had just went, they had Dykstra he can really do some cool things, but it feels like we had a lot of, Clash of the Titans.
I love stuff here. That it got that cheesy at spots though. It was, I love that mix. Now, of course, when they find, the bodies on the ship, on the alien ship, they're in these glass cases naked.
Yes.
And they did something that, as you pointed out, had to be for ratings. The lower frontal nudity on the male aliens was either strategically blocked or blurred. Definitely not the case with the female alien.
Right.
Had to be a ratings thing.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. You couldn't get away with that for long,
Yeah. And then they show Earth as, they lost track of the shuttle, the Churchill. And even though the movie was released in 85, it had to have been shot earlier because it got very Planet 70s up in there. Like, if it was early 80s, I would understand that, but it was 85. This was like the beginning of hair metal. Maybe things were different in the UK.
Well, I noticed that the Columbia still had the blue, or not the blue, the white back tank.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to remember when that sort of, they were using the rust color for that instead. And I think that was around 81, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, that makes sense then. It was shot way earlier, which is why it looks all 70s.
At least some of that stuff.
I would love to know how legit that giant VHS that they pulled out is, if that's like really a thing that they do on shuttles or not. And I loved Dr. Falada, who ends up being... I didn't remember Dr. Falada, but he ends up being like a major thing in the movie. He points out that he's not qualified to pass judgment on alien death. Loved that line.
Yeah, he is a really unique character because... You know, I guess there's no moral compass there. It's just kind of... Everything's matter of fact.
Yeah. He's sort of... And it's not science for science's sake. He's not like that kind of character. He just kind of accepts what's happening and doesn't judge, which is fascinating. Right. I also loved his line about how we're all vampires because we all live off of the energy of other creatures.
And the colonel, I really expected him to be, you know, the bad guy or turn bad or something. Right. He just didn't seem like a likable guy.
You mean Carlson, Rosbach's character, right? The one who survived.
Oh, that's right. They're both colonels.
Okay. Which Peter colonel are you talking about? Kane?
Yeah.
The one he partnered with for most of the movie, yeah. He was just kind of the typical prick, British prick. He's you know, it's an iconic, you know, trope. I didn't necessarily think he was, you know, going to be evil. He kind of reminded me of the guy from Split Second in the beginning, the British guy.
Hmm.
Kind of that by the book, you know, British cop character.
Oh, okay. You know, but... You just kind of saw him selling them out or something like that, you know, you didn't...
I was kind of waiting for Rosbach's character to end up being the bad guy, you know, at some point. Which, I mean, arguably he kind of sort of was in a way, kind of.
But the weird thing about this movie is the twist is there are no twists.
Right.
Everybody pretty much is... Almost everybody is who they say they are.
Right.
You know,
I mean, we get confirmation that Carlson is maybe one of the vampires at the end. I don't know exactly. Was he always one of them? Was he like an advanced scout they sent? You know,
I don't think so. I think he became one when
she turned him on the ship, on the shuttle.
Right, right. Okay. It's, you know, the story of the Lamia. You know, where
right.
You're feeding them, and they're feeding you.
Right. And it was all very kind of intense and dramatic until the male vampires wake up. And then we got some great gore.
Right.
Great fake gore. I mean, very cheesy. Not believable, but like very cheesy, like gunshot wounds and fake gore. Loved the reanimated corpse of the guard when he wakes back up.
Right, you get some of your Clash of the Titans.
But it was a really nice design. He was
California
was just
raisin.
A desiccated body animated. Loved the design and the effect.
Yeah.
Kind of had mixed feelings when she got close. you know, less eye candy, but also less cheese. You know, maybe I'd be able to take the movie a bit more seriously.
Yeah, that is a... conflicted, yeah.
and also seeing what happened when the turned guard couldn't feed kind of gave me an idea of like, okay, that explains the bat aliens because they were just kind of desiccated. Come to find out, no, that's the original species.
And yeah, right. I guess they turn humans and humans have to they force the humans into taking life source for themselves.
And I like that it does commit to the vampire thing, because they show the people who were sired turning and, you know, needing to feed and all of that. It doesn't shy away from, yes, this is a vampire movie.
It's weird, though, that it's a space vampire and zombie movie all rolled in one.
Right. Then we get the recovering of the escape pod when Carlson's brought back. Nice, very short but very dramatic, intense scene there. It's weird to see people shaking hands these days.
It's weird hearing someone say, "Houston, we have a problem," and it's not a joke, and it's not Apollo 13.
Right.
But Lovell did actually say that before Tom Hanks did. So. Right.
That was a quote. They were referencing the original, not that.
Yes.
I'm glad we finally saw what actually happened. Well, we get two versions of what happened on the Churchill, but we get something filled in, you know, about a half hour in after they rescue Carlson. Because we had no idea before then.
I mean, it's kind of, I thought it was kind of obvious, but then, yeah, they bring up the, you know, someone's possessed and destroys equipment and...
Mm-hmm.
And then just everyone gets killed by the vampire.
Right. It's interesting that he chose to light up the bat alien when he was, you know, burning the ship. I guess it's the driest thing around. It makes sense. It's in the same room as them. Seemed an odd choice, though. now, the sex scene in the movie, was it actually a dream, do you think? Or did she really connect with him?
Oh, man. And it was so obvious, like, oh, we're about to have a dream, you know, sequence, mm-hmm. you know?
Well, it was totally played as a dream, but I think she actually did connect with him.
But it's so rare to see a dream sequence set up in the way it is in this movie of, like, we've changed the way, you know, the camera perspective, you know, mm-hmm. and focus, and he's in bed, and it's kind of like, there is no, like... Is this real or not? Like, you know, it's a dream going in, which
begs the question of, was it? You know?
Well, if it's happening in your mind, is it real or not?
That's fair. The question, you know, was it a product of his mind or her connecting to his mind?
Oh, it's definitely her connecting to his mind.
I would think so, too. But that's, I think, the most refreshing thing about this movie. It has absolutely no pretense.
Right. There's kind of this, trying to think if it's intentional or not, that, you know, is he, are they really telling a story about libido and you know, being beholden to it and not having your free will? You know, is that, I mean, is that any vampire story, of course,
well, that's every vampire story, yeah.
Yeah.
That and infectious disease, which is what vampires are really about. You know, as soon as we can make movies again, there's going to be a slew of vampire and zombie movies, mark my words.
Oh, really? I don't know.
That's what it's about, man.
Do people really want to see it after living it, though? I mean...
It's the whole purpose of those stories is to talk about what we're living through now. So I think it's going to happen.
It's kind of like how Emmerich movies went out after 9/11. It was like, okay, right. We've seen the buildings crash. We really don't need to see it again, dude.
True. Well, yeah, when you've seen it in reality. But I think there's going to be a lot of things that need to be excised from people's heads, and they're going to come out in the form of vampire and zombie movies after this. Now... Making Carlson immune to the vampires kind of feels like a cheat. But I think it works for the plot.
Well, right, because if he's one of them, you know, they wouldn't... I guess they can't really go after her. Like, they can't go after her.
and it doesn't make him the target on the run from them, which would have been even more cliche than the movie was.
Well, how about the whole... towards the end where they actually had a path laid out for him of the bodies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's clearly being enlisted. He's being brought in so he can, what's the word I'm looking for? Congress with her and, you know, bring for help, you know, to bring the energy back to the ship or something. There was one thing that did kind of surprise me. The alien being in Armstrong, Patrick Stewart's character.
I didn't expect that. That was it was such a quick switch too that you're like, wait, what? What's going on here? And my version had the kiss cut.
It was actually Patrick Stewart's first on-screen kiss, and it was with Steve Railsback in this movie.
Yeah, you do not see them kiss in my version, the HBO Max version.
They didn't show much in the version I saw. It was just like a blink and you'll miss it contact. Just enough to let you know that's what happened.
Like, their heads come together, kind of, but they don't show them coming together. You infer.
Mm-hmm.
I think you see him kissing her instead, actually.
Oh, wow. Well, they do kind of shift between the two.
Right.
For a while there. Loved the sort of up-facing angles when they were discussing giving him another dose, though. Very Hammer.
Yeah.
And the steak Falada used to kill one of the male vampires. I want that. It's this ornate, you know, leather-handled iron and was it leaded iron steak?
I don't know.
It looks like this very ornate sword. Loved it. And staking them in the energy center right beneath the heart was great. It's sort of like where one of the chakras supposedly is. That was a really nice touch. And the cheesy as fuck blood vomit in the helicopter.
the blood that forms her.
Yeah. These two, you know, victims who had died, victims of the vampires who had been infested by them on the helicopter. Rookie mistake.
Right.
Blood starts flowing out of their mouths and noses and congeals together. Kind of forms a heart at first, and then that turns into her.
Probably the best effect in the whole movie, actually.
Yeah. And his flashback to opening, you know, the case and what actually happened on the Churchill, really reminded me of the Tom Waits story.
Oh. She did the same thing to me.
Henry Rollins, Tom Waits story, look it up.
Yeah.
And then we get to the plagues in London, which is like, you know, one of my perspective titles sums it up best, Romero's Ghostbusters.
I love the scene where they're driving through and they pretty much just have this thing of flame, someone screaming, flame, someone screaming.
I half expected to hear, I believe it's magic.
A lot of those scenes I was expecting to see Thriller play through or something. But also I was expecting someone running through the crowd yelling, it's a cookbook! It's a cookbook!
Yes. Also, when Kane and Carlson went to see the Prime Minister and he got turned.
It's very Monty Python.
I love how they just like noped out. Just like very casually.
And we're done here. But yeah, it was very Python. Very like, can I see you back here for a moment?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, which one of them was the vampire in that scene?
The Prime Minister.
He was, and he was turning her. Okay, I wasn't.
Because, I mean, I think they were pretty obvious about it because he was like wiping like the from his mouth.
Mm-hmm. True, yeah.
And just like all sweaty and just. Yeah.
But there was no shock on their face. No, like, oh my God, what are we going to do? They just turned around and noped out.
Yeah, it's time to get out of here.
And at first I thought the spread of the virus in London, the plague, as they called it, was too sudden. But then I thought, okay, feral vampirism would spread that quickly in a major city.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a zombie outbreak. It would spread that quickly.
It's kind of like why in mid-March we were like on edge here.
Not to bring it back to this.
Yeah, well, that's exactly why I think that people aren't going to want to see these kinds of movies when we're done with this.
It's a question. A lot of them are going to be written and pitched.
Yeah.
It's a question of whether they get greenlit. It's a question of whether the studio executives think there's money. Because a lot of them are being written right now. I would bet that.
So, were you okay with the love story in this one?
Yeah, because it was kind of destructive.
Yeah.
It wasn't like the typical romantic subplot. And it was all about being... Well, he wasn't in love. He was a ghoul. He was thralled.
I thought the whispering of his name was a bit on the nose. I think we could have lived without that.
He was a sexualized Renfield. You know, so it wasn't like a normal love story. I like that. Also liked the explanation of that, how they're collecting the energy. I always enjoy getting a bit of good phlebotinum. And one of them, at one point, he's telling someone, you know, if we find the source, we won't have to destroy London. I think Kane said that. And then one of the generals said, but we only have an hour and a half. Like, we don't have time to save the city. Like, not like, go try, but we'll have to make a move in an hour and a half. But we only have an hour and a half.
That probably would have been the best ending of this, is like, they save the day, and then the bomb goes and, off anyway. They
bake London anyway.
Fuck this, we're not taking any chances. You guys are all toast.
And I liked how gradually they gave away that Falato was turned. Because you don't expect him to get turned.
He's kind of there in the dark, you know.
Well, when you get to that scene, you're like, wait, what's up? And they give it away kind of little by little. But he's not someone you expect from the beginning.
You kind of expect something bad to happen with him. Like, again, he's another guy you think is going to be a bad guy, which is really the weird thing about this movie, or who the good guys and the bad guys. You kind of feel they should be the other way around almost.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that makes it interesting.
Right, right. By the way, one of the male vampires was played by Chris Jagger, younger brother of Mick Jagger.
I was wondering about that.
Yeah, there's a bit of a resemblance. And at the very end, I realized what the alien ship reminded me of. Do you remember Lex?
Vaguely.
The sci-fi series, Syfy. Yeah, I think it was, yeah, they were still the Sci-Fi Channel, maybe. About an organic ship. Really fun series. Kind of very, very weird. Highly recommend checking it out if you can find it. But the ship reminded me a lot of the Lex.
I just thought it was an umbrella.
Yeah. Or an artichoke. Sequel and remakes.
Sequels and remakes.
Oh, it doesn't really need a sequel or a remake, because we got everything we need in the story.
Yeah, but you know what?
Or sequel or a prequel, I should say, because we got everything in the story.
They definitely have a prequel set up. This, especially because they said the line, "This isn't the first time they've done this."
Oh yeah, I guess. Yeah. So there's a remake. I don't know. In the right hands, but I don't know who could really mix that cheese and drama as well as it was done in this movie.
There would be a lot of CGI instead.
Yeah. Nah, forget it. Leave it. It was, you know.
I think there was a remake, actually. Wasn't it called Species?
Fair point. Underbrain?
Underbrains.
I love it. It, like I said, it's just this amazing mix of intense British drama and absolute fucking ridiculous cheese. I'm going 5.
I think I'm going to recommend it, but I mean, it's definitely not a work of perfection. I'm going to recommend it though, because it's interesting, and I think there's a lot to talk about for it. So I'm going 4.
All right. And what have we learned?
that a light coming out of your backside can, I don't know. Where's the light force exiting from?
Yeah, I learned a couple of things. I learned that space isn't as cold as they lead you to believe.
Yeah, she didn't look cold at all.
And that some ways to die are better than others.
And, I mean, she broke all that glass and none of it cut her feet somehow.
She actually did have like pads glued to the back, the bottom, the soles of her feet.
Right. Well, she would have had to have as an actress, a human actress. Yeah. But you know, I guess her feet could regenerate. Maybe, I don't know.
She's a vampire.
Yeah.
All right, that's it for Life Force. Until I say, I almost said Lifetime. Until next time, when we'll be reviewing Reign of Fire, kind of starting a fantasy trilogy of sorts. It's Reign of Fire, Lady Hawk, and Labyrinth. Reign of Fire is a little more sci-fi, though.
It feels like this kind of kicks it off already, though.
Yeah, kind of. And Reign of Fire, unintentionally very timely. It's about dragons being found in an attempt to expand the London Underground in 2020.
Oh.
It's set in 2020. I just found that out. Anyway, until then, of course, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.
Accidentally clicked, so I'm recording. Fire at will.
Oh, all right. Are we testing or recording?
Oh, I didn't test. This is live. We're ready to go. Fire at will.
Oh, we're on now. This is going to be some sort of outtake or something.
Totally forgot to test.
All right, I'll go.